There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hameed, my co-host. This is podcast number 761, June 25th, 2018. Nasser?
Thank you, sir, or should I say merci beaucoup, and greetings and pastis regards from Paul Rica, Lois Leeds, after Le Castellet.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, why does Fernando even show up? Mercedes will begin to ramp it up, and Vettel knows better. Nas, welcome to the studio. How are you?
Sir, I am doing very good. I have to say, good to have Formula One back in your spiritual homeland, and I must say, Paul Rica is a very colorful track. I am told the blue lines slow the cars down, and the red lines are even more effective. Talk about technology in living color. Did you enjoy your home race, sir?
I did enjoy it somewhat, just because it was Paul Rica, Sud de France, La Belle Vie, but the traffic issues for the people, I'm sure, were really terrible, and I apologize for my people, what we've done to the people, because traffic problems at a race when it's warm outside is not fun.
Yes, but Ross Brawn has promised that he will look into it and find a diffuser to solve this problem also.
Good news for everybody. But no, great race, but Vettel, and remember what you said about Martin Brundle, really? Last podcast, you said, you quoted Martin Brundle, really, the person who's going to win the championship is the person, the driver, that makes the least amount of mistakes.
That is correct.
Well, Vettel should have been listening.
Well, you know, he understands German very well.
Jawohl, mein Herr.
So he should have said, Achtung, and then given his fatwa, Formula One fatwa. But, you know, the guy who is going really ooh-la-la is, of course, Lewis Hamilton, dominating from pole position and taking win number 3 of the season. And Sebastian must have been dreaming of Singapore the night before the race. And my question, Mr. Rogers, where I'm confused is, what has happened to Max Verstappen? He's losing his touch. No pun intended.
Well, that's the irony. Apparently, he's playing tag, and Vettel was it.
Yeah, but if there's any positive coming out from Paul Rica weekend, is we may have two X-World champions racing in the United States next year. Nando going after Triple Crown, and Mr. Raikkonen, I have a suggestion for him. He may be a good teammate to Courtney Force. The Iceman has tried WRC in Camping World Truck Series. Why not drag racing? Events are short. Now, here is the best part for him. Events are short, right up his alley. A little more action, a little less conversation.
And more Haagen-Dazs.
Absolutely. Oh, yes. And you can even get a blue bunny in the US of A.
Bravo.
Shall we do Quali and carry on?
Yes, please. Please do Quali.
Well, you know, normal service was expected to return in the south of France. And it sure did, Lewis taking his 75th pole position and was joined on the front row by a teammate from Finlandia, Mr. Bottas. And here was my best part of the quali. Lewis got new motivation. As soon as he climbed out of the car, he was interviewed by who?
Jean-Zélecy.
Yes, our favorite. Also during the post-quali interview was another F1 driver, Frank Montani. But Signor Arriva Bene was not a happy camper, as his numero uno could only get third place on the grid. But I had a very strong feeling that the red car will have an impact in the race, not the way it turned out. And Charles Leclerc, your whippersnapper, was the star of qualifying, hauling his Alfa Romeo Sauber into Q3. His point scoring and quali performances should see him as part of spaghetti culture next season, and they're already talking about this. And this was first time since 2015 Monza that a Sauber made it to Q3, and team boss Frederick Vasseur was seen doing a birdie rich on the paddock counter. So good to see the little people also getting some joy out of Formula One. And here from the Why Am I Not Surprised folder, Romain Grosjean goes into the wall. What else is new? Martin Brundle, once again I have to quote Martin Brundle, he described it best. Ambition ahead of adhesion. Your thoughts on Romain Grosjean?
Completely falling apart. And when I saw the accident, who else would have done that in Q3?
I would say apart from him.
Apart from him.
I can think of one driver who spun on the parade lap and made Ross Brawn giggle, Juan Pablo Montoya. And talking of Nando, here's some more. I think we talked briefly about this last podcast about McLaren. According to a report in the English newspaper, the Daily Mail, there is a mutiny on the bounty going on at McLaren. Obviously, the team has denied that, but Martin Whitmarsh has gone on record saying that he has been approached by disgruntled employees, and if he is asked to return to McLaren by them, meaning Mansoor Oje and his money men from Bahrain, they know where to find him. And Zak Brown responded by saying, well, he's unemployed, he's looking for a job, but it won't be at McLaren, so let's see what happens. One thing I will say, after throwing Honda under the bus all season long last year and doing a lot of talk of racing at the front and dreams of podium finishes, it is now pretty obvious the GP2 engine was not the only problem they had. And all this talk of McLaren IndyCar team, Le Mans team, I think there will be some casualties if they keep going down in their F1 performance. At least I do not see any uptick in the near future. But something tells me when the Titanic was sinking, they were not sending telex messages to Club Med for another trip. What say you?
It's a disaster. I mean, even if they had a Mercedes engine, look at Williams. They got the Mercedes package. They're pathetic. And McLaren is following that recipe very well. I mean, I don't know what's going on, but they have bigger problems than power plants.
Well, they had Mercedes engine after Lewis's championship in 2008, but they've been going downhill, which is very sad, you know. And obviously, as a racing fan, I would love to see them and Williams start climbing back, but it's not looking good for the rest of the season for them.
No, I'm sure it's frustrating for Fernando.
Yeah, but you know, track coming up like Spa and Monza, Suzuka, high-speed tracks, I think they're going to be suffering.
Indeed.
Yeah, but after the qualifying, Nando was very upbeat, saying very proudly, and I have to agree with him, that he was 2/10 faster than the most talented young driver on the grid, of course referring to his own teammate from Belgium, Stoffel Van Dorn, which really says a lot about Nando. That, you know, Stoffel Van Dorn won everything before F1, and even in his second year, he is not able to match, they have the same equipment, basically. He's really no match for Nando. But once upon a time, there was another rookie who won everything before getting to Formula One. And we all know what happened when he was a rookie as teammate to Nando. You have forgotten that season, 2007, so that's okay.
I have forgotten that season.
Now, that really speaks very well for how talented Lewis Hamilton is. I mean, it's pretty impressive. 75 pole position, any comment on that?
Nope.
Yeah, it's speechless, huh? But, you know, Grosjean, Kimi, and Nando should call Norwegian Cruise Line for a season-long world cruise in 2019. For additional company, F1 Weekly would like to remind them, Monty and Karma also have time on hand.
So very true.
It is, you know, absolutely amazing, Clark. I was having a discussion with somebody a few days ago how success in talented junior series is no guarantee of a great career in Formula One. And between Romain Grosjean and Nico Hülkenberg, what they did in junior series you really cannot do much. I mean, I remember at one time, Romain Grosjean, this was like before he came back to Renault, a second time around. At one time in a season, he was racing in three series. I think it was GP2, AutoGP, and GT Racing. And he was winning races in three different categories in one season. And Nico Hülkenberg, one of the few to win GP2 in his first attempt. And look how their careers have gone.
Yeah, it's unbelievable, but...
Here comes Max Verstappen, just 1 year in single-seater, and he is just, you know, the love of his life as far as Dr. Marco is concerned.
So true.
Yeah. So, would you like to describe the start of the race in your professional broadcast voice?
My voice is hoarse from freaking out, but it was a great start for Lewis Hamilton.
Well, Sebastian Vettel said his start was too good, and of course, I expected... Sebastian either to lead the race or be second by the time they were on the Mistral straight. But he just, you know, messed it up. And this can be a fantastic season if he and Lewis don't make mistakes. But as it was, Lewis took the lead, which he never surrendered, and basically was unchallenged for the rest of the race. But I have to say that, you know, when Sebastian went to the pits and so did Bottas, I thought the race was over for Sebastian Vettel. But when I saw him back, I just knew that, you know, that car is a fast car, and there's no question about it that this kid is going to come back rip-roaring, which he did. But a little too late, I guess.
A little too late. And with all the runoff, I mean, I know there's been some big accidents at the start of Grand Prix at Paul Ricard, but Vettel really needs to keep focus. Because once again, he's behind in the championship, and a couple more mistakes like this, and it's going to be over.
Yeah, oh yeah. Like, you know, it's the same thing for him as it is for Lewis. If one of these kids go down 40 points to the other one, it's going to be very, very... And, you know, part of the reason is cars are so reliable that the way you're going to go down is probably making a mistake or your team making a mistake, and... Pastor Maldonado is no longer in Formula One, so you cannot depend on him on taking out your competitor.
Well, the cars are very dependable, but kablamos still happen. And all it takes is one to just spin this thing out of control.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I really thought last year when they went into the vacation period, I thought it was over for Lewis Hamilton. And boy, did Mercedes come back strong.
Indeed.
Yeah. So that's the way it goes sometimes, you know. A victory for Lewis at Paul Ricard means he has now won on 26 different tracks and every track on the 2018 calendar or schedule. More importantly, he retakes the championship lead from Seb, and like we said, he was never under pressure to the start after Seb and Bottas played Let's Get Physical. And because of the long Mistral straight, I did not expect charge of the Red Bulls against the Silver Arrows, and this is first podium for Lewis since winning in Spain. And Lewis really... You know, if you look at his victory in Azerbaijan, was a hand-me-down. But I think he's putting his championship season on the right track. And he drives car number 44. And this was the same number of wins for him as a Mercedes driver. Now, Niki Lauda and Lewis were very surprised about the penalty of 5 seconds. Before I tell you what I my thoughts on this, what say you?
I didn't think it mattered. They could have written it up as a racing incident. He still had to get a new wing, drive through the field. So, I mean, his race was compromised from the accident. So 5 seconds, 10 seconds, I really didn't care.
Well, you know, my take on this, first of all, there are many racing incidents, so I don't like to see a lot of penalties. But my take on issues, you know, I'm not talking about just this one, but if there is a blatant mistake or a deliberate screw up like in Azerbaijan, they should hit where it hurt. I think best thing to do, because, you know, 5 second penalty did nothing for him, and nor did the penalty, Mickey Mouse penalty he got last year in Azerbaijan. But I think to hurt these drivers, they should give them a penalty of a position or 2-3 position, depending on how serious they... If you're really taking out a competitor or ruining somebody else's race, then you should pay, you know, maybe a position. Because what happens? 5 second penalty sometimes may not do anything, or even a 10 second penalty may not hurt you too much, especially if the other guy cannot even race. So maybe if they give a penalty of a position or two position in that race, that will get their attention. So basically, if you win a race by taking somebody out on the final lap or whatever lap, then, you know, at least you won't get to enjoy the champagne on the podium. It will be as a second place finisher. But that's just my personal opinion.
No, I agree with you. I mean, taking away championship points is the most brutal of punishments.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, to give these guys a $5,000, $20,000 penalty, I mean, that's nothing.
That's for sure.
Okay, now, Max, back-to-back podium finishes for Yoss and Dr. Marcos Wunderkind. He went off track to avoid the carnage from Seb and Bottas on on-track meeting. He later complained of not-so-cool vibration on his car, but was able to keep calm and carry on. And the thing is, you know, during the broadcast, they mentioned when he went off that, you know, they might give him a penalty. And I'm glad they did not, because this was, maybe he took advantage of it. But I don't want a penalty. Remember some years ago, there was a penalty for, the most classic example is the race that Lewis lost in Belgium in the closing stages.
Yeah.
And they gave him a penalty because he had let Raikkonen pass. But I mean, there was some, you know, that he did not fall back enough or whatever. And they gave him a penalty and Massa won the race. And his comment after the race, we all know how good Massa was in the rain. And his comment was, I was driving like a grandma.
Beautiful.
Yes, sir. Kimi Raikkonen, good to see the quiet man of Formula One on the podium. His 25th since his last victory, which was Australia 2013. This is the longest run of podium finishes without a win. And we were treated to a rare sight of Kimi passing Arriva Bene's ace of pace, his own illustrious teammate, Mr. Vettel. Something I thought I would not see this season till Sebastian wins the championship. Rumors and reports are red hot as the Ferrari exhaust that this will be Kimi's last season in Maranello to be replaced by a young man from Monte Carlo. And I am now beginning to believe that they will replace this guy. What do you think?
Well, he'll be 40 next year. Let's not get ridiculous.
Will he really be 40 next year?
Kimi Räikkönen, yeah.
Hard to believe, you know, hard to believe that he has won championship, the talent he is. I remember many years ago we interviewed Matt Bishop, and I asked him about his opinion on Kimi Räikkönen, and he said, which I always believed at that time, that this is one of the greatest racing talents ever to sit in the cockpit of a racing car, that he is going out with one championship. Nando, who made his Grand Prix debut in the same race as Kimi, is going out with two. And it's the same thing here, you know. This is reflected on the other side of the pond also. If you look at IndyCar racing, two of the greatest talents and most successful drivers in the last 30 years were Paul Tracy and Michael Andretti. And between the two, all they have is one championship each, which is absolutely mind-boggling.
Yeah, it is.
Now, Ricciardo, Daniel Ricciardo, two Red Bull drivers on the podium, was looking very good, but he suffered damage to his front wing, which affected the downforce, and this could have been from debris on the track, at least according to Mr. Christian Horner. His brief fight with Kimi for podium finish was interesting to watch, and this has really, really surprised me, the news that McLaren has made a serious offer for his services, and Eric Bouyer has confirmed that they are interested in his services and services of other top-line drivers, but it's hard to see Daniel Ricciardo at Ferrari as teammate to Sebastian, and given the close relationship between Bottas and Toto, it will take a complete meltdown by Valtteri to be replaced by Mercedes, which beckons the question, why on earth would Ricciardo go to McLaren and for what? Fight with Marcus for solid 15th in the race, or ask the team where is Julian Palmer on track? Do you think he may end up at McLaren?
Oh, God, you never know. I mean, I think that would be terrible.
Yeah, it will be terrible. And then K-Mag, Kevin Magnussen, has firmly established himself as the Great Dane at Haas F1. And I am happy for him as McLaren gave him the Isaac Hayes CD. You know which one.
Who's the black private dick that's a sassy machine to all the chicks? You're damn right. A man that would risk his neck for his brother, man.
Thank you, sir. To bring back Nando, he was sixth in the race, and this was very impressive. All the team's 27 points have been scored by Kevin Magnussen. Romain Grosjean is one of two drivers, along with Sergei Sirotkin, who have not scored a point. And that's really, really bad.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. And Bottas, you know, I was expecting him to fight back, but because of the floor damage, he could not do it. So his Benz Wagen came in seventh. Carlos Sainz Jr., man, he was looking very good in the early goings, but then he had some, he complained of loss of power and ended up finishing eighth. Did you think for a second that he might finish in the top three?
Carlito was kicking ass, but then some kind of issue. But both Renaults finishing in the top 10 is still a good accomplishment.
Yeah, Hülkenberg was ninth, and I was really hoping, I was thinking, you know, if we cannot see Hülkenberg on the podium, at least we should see Carlos Sainz Jr., and it would have been very good for Renault on home soil, but it was not to be. Now, Charles Leclerc picked up the final point by finishing 10th, and this young man over the last few years has displayed championship winning style that gets you into Formula One, winning GP3 and F2 in rookie seasons. And now in his young F1 career, he is proving what needs to be done. Job number one is to be head and shoulders above your teammate and hopefully shampoo away Kimi from his seat at Scuderia Ferrari for 2019. Who knows, maybe Ferrari will announce at Monza, or maybe Kimi will announce like Schumacher did, that he's retiring, and then everybody will know who's joining the team. And now, sir, we have to talk about your hero, Nando. Hero to zero from one Sunday in France to another. Last weekend, he won what they are now calling the 24 Hours of Le Mans, which is a nice name. This past weekend was not so kind to the man who gave Renault back-to-back championships back in the Mile 7 and Wild 7, meaning Fabio Briatore Day. No joy or feel so good for him, despite dumping Honda and reuniting with Renault Power. It was sad to hear him complain about no brakes and tires. Too bad, no Midas muffler and brakes on the Mistral straight. I just cannot see him continue in this misery and stay in Formula One after this season. Would you like to, I'm pretty sure you would like to see him get out of this, you know, rut he's in.
Absolutely. I say, if he can't get a Mercedes seat or a Red Bull seat or a Ferrari seat, come to America. We have a good hot dog.
And you know his situation, not to throw him under the bus, but his situation is really a case study for young drivers, that here you have for a driver to dethrone Michael Schumacher, that pretty much establish him as one of the all-time great. The talent that this guy is, that you have championship-winning teams that are not interested in dealing with him, and that's very sad. And I still think that FOM should have engineered a seat for him as either at Mercedes or Red Bull. But, you know, they are not interested. You know, it's one of those things that, what the Western Union man brings, your services, in his case, are not required. Very sad.
Very sad, but if he could do the Triple Crown, that'll kick him right back up to the top.
Well, he is at the top. The guy has not won a everybody knows. Anybody who has followed Formula One for the last few years. You know, I'll tell you an example. During the 1985, this is how people know talent. During the 1985 season, long before it was over, I was at a bookstore in Cali, and there was this book called Greatest Grand Prix Drivers. Okay? And I could not believe that this was like halfway through the 85 F1 season, and Ayrton Senna was included in that group. So, Nando, whether he wins Triple Crown or not, this guy is going to be definitely regarded as one of the all-time greats. I would go to say so far that probably most people would put him in the top 10 of all-time great Grand Prix drivers.
I agree.
Yeah. So, anyway, so shall we take a look at the championship standings now?
My favorite.
Even though Nando is not leading, hard to believe.
Hard to believe.
Lewis leading with 145 points. Sebastian is second on 131. Ricciardo is third with 96 points. Bottas is next on 92 points. Kimi is fifth at 83 points. And Max sixth on 68 points. Okay, Constructors' Championship, Mercedes 237 points. Ferrari second, 214. Red Bull, powered by Renault, is third on 164. The official Renault team is more than 100 points behind in fourth place with 62 points, which really shows the magic of Mr. Newey, how good that chassis is. McLaren, also powered by Renault, completes the top five with 40 points. Any other thoughts you may have from the French Grand Prix at Paul Ricard?
Well, it was lovely to see the French people happy. A lot of people showed up to the race. It was perfect weather, 75 degrees. I'm sure the beer was good and refreshing.
Yes, sir, by the Mediterranean. A very nice part of France, yeah, so I'm glad this race is back, and I just hope they bring back the Grand Prix of Argentina. And I'm not so high on the, Hanoi Grand Prix or Grand Prix de Papua New Guinea. But let's see what happens. You know, one thing you did not mention, we have a Le goodie bag in this edition of podcast.
That's beautiful. We always love goodie bags here, Nasser.
Yeah, this one is Le goodie bag.
Le Chateau.
There you go. So shall we take a break and then come back with the Mondial, and we'll do the goodie bag after the Mondial?
We'll be back after this brief message.
Okay, folks, I'm here at Nürburgring with the racing sensation of F3 for this year, Mr. Max Verstappen. Max, welcome back to F1 Weekly. Last time we were in Vegas when we met you 2 years ago, and here you are fighting for the championship. Tell us what has been going on this year, please.
Yeah, I mean, I made a step from karting to F3. It was a big step, to be honest. But in the beginning, I made some mistakes, rookie mistakes, I can say. But at the moment, it's just going really well, and I just had my 8th victory of the season already.
Congratulations. I was talking to your dad earlier, and he said that when you went for Formula Renault testing, you were very quick, and you were very quick in F3 testing and felt comfortable. What were you thinking before the season started, what you could do?
Well, I didn't really have any ambitions. I just wanted to do my best and make as less as mistakes as possible, and try just to finish races. But the expectations got a bit better already after the first weekend, where I scored my first podium, second, and from there on just got better and better.
Well, you know, 6 races in a row is very, very hard in any form of motor racing. When you were after you won your first race, second race, third race, and you were leading your fourth and fifth race, did you think that, hey, this is just too good to be true?
Well, I mean, we had a great car in Spa and in Nürburgring, so I knew it was possible. And I think those were also one of the easiest races I've had.
Why is that?
I mean, everything I think was perfect at that time. I adapted well to the circuit. The car was handling good, so it was also, you know, when you have a good car, it's easier to drive. And from there on, it's just control the race.
First victory is always the best. Which one was the most satisfying for you?
I think the one in Spa, when I started 5th and I finished 1st at the end. But I overtook 2 guys in Lecombe, so that was a nice move. And I was really happy with that race.
Okay, you're very young and doing very well. Are you already a big superstar in Holland?
The last week I had a lot of news coming through, and a lot of newspapers, they had an article about me. But I mean, at the moment I'm focusing on F3, and I don't worry too much about what they're writing.
So if you're walking down to get some coffee in Hilversum or Anderlecht, average man will know you?
I don't know. I haven't done it yet, so we will see.
Okay. Now, the big news you're referring to is the signing by Red Bull, and you were also being quoted by Mercedes. What was the main decision based on to go with Red Bull, in your opinion?
We were already talking since 2010 with Red Bull, and this year in karting, it's always hard to judge how good you are at the end because it's not a car. But from this year, I had some really good results, and also they saw it. So we were always in contact, like I said, and the feeling got better and better, and at the end we made the decision.
Okay. Now, if Dr. Marco was to say to you, hey Max, where do you want to race next year? Realistically, what would be your answer?
To be honest, I really don't know. At the moment, just focusing on F3, and we still have to speak about next year. for me at the moment doesn't matter.
You know, it's very rare in motor racing to see a rookie win a championship. This year we have two rookies, you and Esteban Ocon, which is fantastic for both of you guys and for the sport. Do you think you have still enough races left to beat him to the championship?
I think it's hard. I need some luck as well from his side, that if he can make mistakes or bad luck, what I had also in the beginning of the year with some mechanical issues. But at the moment, I'm just trying to do my best and try to gain as much points as I can.
With a big company like Red Bull as your sponsor now, do you feel any extra pressure?
No, I'm really relaxed. So I mean, the only thing you can do is your best, and more than that, you can't do.
Well, I asked you a question in Vegas when you were in karting, and I'm going to ask you again. Just a matter of time, a year or two, you're in Formula One. Can I come and do an interview with you like this?
When I'm in F1?
Yeah.
Of course you can do an interview.
Okay, you're on the record twice. Thank you for that. Finally, how about a message for our listeners, please? And tell them about your website also.
Thank you for following, and I hope it was a good interview, and you can always visit my website, www.verstappen.nl. So, I hope to see you there.
Thank you very much.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial, the king, the guru himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir. The globe will stay in south of France for a little more, because there is more action from Paul Ricca, Formula 2, previously known as our favorite, Happy Dos. And I have to say, best part of watching F2 races is listening to Davide Valsecchi. He is Father Guido Sarducci of Grand Prix Weekend. Very impressive win from pole position by Mercedes junior driver George Russell. He led every lap of the race, first in the wet, then in the dry, and in the closing laps held off a strong challenge from ex-Red Bull junior driver Sergio Sette Camara. Championship leader Lando Norris stalled at the start. He is prone to this issue since last year and had the problem many times last year in the European Formula 3 Championship. But he will be at Goodwood next month, and we will try to find out what's happening. Sunday's sprint race was won by Nyck de Vries. Lando Norris was fifth and stays on top of the championship standings. He is on his way to winning 6 championship and 6 attempts, so quite an amazing talent. I heard from somebody that his contract with McLaren calls for McLaren confirming that he will have a seat in Formula One as a driver, not as a reserve or, you know, simulator driver. So let's see what happens. I am very, very surprised that he went with McLaren, not at with Ferrari or Red Bull. And I had a brief chat with this Pepito at Po last year, and I asked this question, and he said, what McLaren presented was the best package. So we'll see how it goes out, how it works out for him, I should say. Okay, GP3, local driver Dorian Boccolacci was the winner of the first race on Saturday, but was disqualified for failing to supply enough fuel for testing after the race. Second place man and fellow Francais Antoine Hubert inherited the win. He felt new motivation on the podium, as third man on the podium was Giuliano Alesi, Bambino of Jean Alesi. And Giuliano is in the Ferrari driver development program. Sunday's second race was won by Callum Ilott of England. He used to be in the Red Bull program and some years ago tried to do a Max, went from karting straight into Formula 3, and then got his booty and walking papers handed out to him by the one and only Dr. Marco. Now he's in the FDA Ferrari Driver Academy, which I think, I can't prove this, but I think it's more based on pesos than performance. Tatiana Calderon, lady driver from Colombia, she's also in one of the driver development programs of one of the F1 teams. Okay, now my hopes were very high, as our friend Inam Ahmed was racing at Nürburgring in the European Formula 3 Championship, and he went into the weekend as leading the championship. Victory in race 1 from pole position was for Marcus Armstrong of New Zealand, who is a very talented kid, and he's also part of the Ferrari Driver Academy. But this kid is based on performance, not mommy daddy sending Kiwi shillings. Race 2 was won by Yuri Vips of Estonia. F1 Weekly friend Inam Ahmed came in second, but got a 20-second penalty, which saw Russian driver Robert Schwartzman hit the wall and retire from the race. And I think his retirement probably made the decision to give him a 20-second penalty, but rules are rules. Final race was won by Red Bull Junior Dan Ticktum. He also won the Macau Grand Prix last year. Marcus Armstrong, as I said, he's from New Zealand, is the new championship leader with 101 points, just one ahead of Daniel Ticktum. The penalty was very costly for Inam, as he is now third in the championship with 87 points. Next race is at Zandvoort in the Netherlands, and yours truly will be there with F1 Weekly familiar member, Mr. Louis Jensen, so I'm looking forward to it. But you know, they have three races per round, and this was round three, and there are seven rounds remaining. So there are 21 races, so this F3 championship is very wide open between some talent, but there's a talent pool is very, very deep this year. And what is interesting, you know, there are a couple of drivers who are in their second or third year, like Ferdinand Habsburg we interviewed a few months ago, and also Ralph Aron from Estonia. And all these young, the top three are pretty much rookies, you know. Ticktum has done a few F3 races, but not a whole season. So it's very impressive to see rookies in the top three in the championship of a very competitive series, I must say. Any thoughts on the European F3, sir?
I hope that Inam can get over this tragic penalty that put him in the, you know, that really dropped him down in the championship. I'm sure he was gutted.
Yeah, but, you know, these things happen in racing. And like I say, better happen here than in Formula One. And next year, you know, I'm sure most of our listeners already know that Formula 3 is merging with GP3. And I don't know what, obviously they'll have a new car probably with more horsepower than the current Formula 3 car, because the GP3 car has a lot more power. And now they're already talking about using these F3 cars as a sort of a F3 regional series. So it's all good. And they're starting a F3 series in here in the US also, which I'm very excited and happy about. Okay, sir, now the globe is moving, tilting towards the other side of the pond. Indy cars from one of the great tracks in the US of A, Road America, Elkhart Lake in Wisconsin. The race was won by All-American boy and poster child for Penske Racing, Joseph Newgarden. He is from Tennessee, man from Tennessee. Another talented Amerikanski from Florida, Ryan Hunter Ray, was second. He is also brother-in-law of Robbie Gordon. Indy Lights, also from Road America, Colton Herta, Bambino of Brian Herta, took his fourth win in a row in the opening race of the weekend. Victor Franzoni of Brazil won the second race of the weekend. Colton was second and leads the championship. And Colton Herta used to race in Europe a few years ago, and he was pretty competitive there. At one time, he and Inam raced together, and also Lando Norris. Now we come to Pikes Peak. Francais, your homeboy Romain Dumas had a new record in winning the hill climb in his electric VW prototype, beating the previous record set by Sebastian Loeb and a Peugeot 5 years ago. And talking of France, naturally takes us to the France family, Kingdom of Lenescar. They were in Northern California at Sears Point. In PC language, this track is known as Sonoma Raceway. Martin Truex was the winner. And Mr. Rogers, I heard a rumor you threw the first hot dog on the grill to get the weekend going.
That's absolutely true.
Yes, sir. Did you watch any of that race on TV?
I did not.
Okay, sir. Now we come back to, or go back to Formula One for a lay goodie bag, as we have a brief history of Grand Prix motor racing in your favorite Shangri-La of Le Mans and Moët-Chandon. The first Grand Prix motor race took place at Le Mans in 1906. Renault with Michelin was the winner. Driver was Hungarian Franz Sisch. The F1 Championship Grand Prix races in France have been held at Reims, also known as Reims, Rouen, Clermont-Ferrand, the Bugatti Circuit at Le Mans, Dijon-Prenois, Paul Ricard, and Manicourt. So now we're going to take a look at some of the races, important races at these different tracks. Shall I begin the begin, sir?
Please.
Thank you. Reims, or Reims, street circuit hosted the first ever French F1 race in 1950, which was won by Fangio, Juan Manuel Fangio, of course, and an Alfa Romeo. In 1953, Mike Hawthorn became the first British driver to win in Formula One, or Championship Formula One, I should say, because they used to have Formula One races before 50 also, when he took a close victory over Juan Manuel Fangio at this track. In 1961, Reims witnessed a very close and last-second win by Italian Giancarlo Baghetti on his Championship Grand Prix debut over Dan Gurney's Porsche. The final Grand Prix at Reims, which is located in the Champagne region of Francia, close to the Belgian border, was won by Jack Brabham in his own car, and Dan Gurney was fifth in his own Eagle. Sir, have you been to Reims? Oh, yes, you have been. That's how I wrote to you when I saw your picture on that San Francisco F1 meetup group. When was that, sir?
That picture? Ooh, I don't know, 2004?
I was there, you know, recently, and I really, really liked the feel of that place, and I am interested in going there and spending more time there, sir, which I may do in the next couple of years. Very impressive place. Clermont-Ferrand, the Charade circuit, is known as the Nürburgring of France. The city is also the home base of Michelin Tire Company and was the hometown of ex-Grand Prix driver Patrick Depailler. You remember Patrick Depailler, sir?
Of course.
The first French Grand Prix here was in 1965, and results show four British drivers in the top five. Jim Clark was the winner, followed by Jackie Stewart and John Surtees. Denny Holm, who was from New Zealand, was fourth, and Graham Hill, who was from London Town, was fifth. There were three Americans in this race, all from California and all retired from the race: Dan Gurney, Richie Ginther, and Ronnie Bucknam. Chris Amon came very close to winning the 1972 French Grand Prix at Clermont-Ferrand in a Matra, but suffered a puncture late in the race. Jackie Stewart won the race, and Emerson Fittipaldi was second, with Amon third. It was during this race that ended the racing career of an Austrian driver by the name of Dr. Helmut Marko, after a stone thrown by Fittipaldi's Lotus entered his visor, causing serious injury to his left eye. Now we come to another track which I have never been to. It's not too far from Paris, but I would love to go there. And you've been to this place, Rouen, right?
Yes.
It is another long-lost great French street circuit. It first hosted the French Grand Prix in 1952, which was won by Alberto Ascari in a Ferrari. First and only F1 victory for Porsche came here in 1962, courtesy of Dan Gurney. 2 years later, Dan would give Brabham his first F1 success at the same track. Joe Schlesser lost his life in a fiery accident after crashing his magnesium-bodied and air-cooled Honda in 1968. This race marked the first Grand Prix win for Jackie X in a Ferrari. And you know, Joe Schlesser was a very good friend of Guy Ligier, and the JS in all the Ligier cars is in his memory. You probably know that.
Of course.
Now we come to Le Mans. The Bugatti circuit hosted the French Grand Prix only once in 1967, which was won by Jack Brabham in a Brabham. Guy Ligier was in this race driving a Cooper Maserati. The French MotoGP takes place at this track. Now we come to our favorite, Dijon-Prenois, close to the Swiss border. Forever and ever will be remembered for the epic battle in 1979 for second place between Gilles Villeneuve and René Arnoux, even though history was made ahead of them, as Jean-Pierre Jabouille scored first ever turbo win in F1 with his Renault. For once, everyone remembers who finished second. The track also hosted the 1982 Swiss Grand Prix, which was won by Keke Rosberg in a Williams. And this was Keke's only victory in the year he won the championship. Dijon-Prenois first hosted the French Grand Prix in 1974. Ronnie Peterson was the winner in a Lotus over Niki Lauda, who was back then enjoying the spaghetti culture very much because it gave him two championships. In 1977, this race I remember very well. Mario Andretti won the race after the Brabham Alfa Romeo of John Watson ran out of petrol on the final lap. Now we come to Manicourt in Nivelles region, also known as Never Again, partly due to being located in the middle of nowhere. In 2006, it celebrated 100 years of French Grand Prix, which was won by Michael Schumacher in a Ferrari. This was his eighth victory at Manicourt. Very, very impressive. Ralph also won here in 2003 in the beautiful Williams BMW. The first race here in 1991 was won by Arnage in a Williams Renault. And now we come to what happened on Sunday. Paul Ricard, built by Monsieur Paul Ricard, who brought pastis to the people, is located not too far from Marseille and the coastal town of Bordeaux. Jackie Stewart won the opening race in 1971. Ronnie Peterson scored his first win here in 1973. Mario Andretti won at Paul Ricca in his championship winning year, 1978. And on a sad note, testing accident in 1986 claimed the life of Brabham driver Elio De Angelis. When Frank Williams had a serious road accident and Graham Hill his fatal plane crash, both were returning from test sessions at Paul Ricca. So that was a brief history of F1 tracks in France. Thank you for listening. And by the way, pastis produced by Pernod Ricard is highly recommended.
Keep up the good work, Ness. And I raised my glass of Ricard to everyone.
Yeah, I was introduced by pastis by our friend Mo. Remember Mo Kazim's dad, Mo Manzoor?
Yep.
Yeah, fantastic drink. Also, you know, we have now a triple header, a race in Austria next weekend coming up, and then followed by the British Grand Prix.
It is the first triple header.
Yeah, this is very, very exciting.
It is very exciting and exhausting.
And, you know, I mean, the word out there is that both these tracks will favor Mercedes cars, so... Do you think we're going to see LCH with a 30-point lead after Silverstone?
It's possible. I know one thing. We're not going to see Fernando on the podium.
You know, there was a lot of talk there might be rain at Paul Ricard during the race, and I thought maybe Nando might get in the top five, if not the top three. But it's very sad to see a talent. I remember, you know, there have been some drivers who kept racing and racing. I remember Graham Hill when he had his Embassy Hill car. I mean, it was very sad to see the only Triple Crown winner languishing in the back of the field. So I want his misery to be over soon.
I could imagine. We all want that misery to end.
Yeah, what this McLaren situation has done, and of course not helped by Nando being there, is really taking Stoffel Vandoorne out of the picture of, you know, like, oh, look at this kid. I mean, not much you can do with that car.
There's nothing. It's bad. I don't know what McLaren is going to do. I still think they need a complete reshuffle from the top down.
I don't know why you're calling for Eric Bouye's head to roll. I mean, he's not the one who designed the car.
I don't care. I want everybody to go start fresh. Doesn't Ron Dennis have a son?
I don't think so.
Bummer.
Oh. I know one of his daughter once bought a house in Beverly Hills, which was at that time, I think, the most expensive or the second most expensive house in the U.S.
I thought that was Bernie's daughter.
What did I say?
Ron Dennis.
No. I'm sorry, Bernie. Yeah, Bernie's daughter. Excuse me.
That's okay. Ron Dennis wouldn't have allowed that.
Yeah, so he has two daughters.
Well, let's get one of them daughters back into managerial positions.
You know, the way things are going, I just have a feeling I will not be surprised one day if Ron Dennis is back in McLaren. Because, you know, these people from Bahrain, who knows? I mean, I don't think they're interested in putting in millions and millions of dollars and have the driver complain, I have a GP2 engine, and basically going nowhere.
I agree. But the problem is that Ron Dennis is not getting any younger. You know, they need help, but I don't see Ron Dennis coming back.
Well, that's what we said about if Fernando Alonso can come back to Ron Dennis and Honda, McLaren. Stranger things have happened, but we'll see. But this thing cannot go on like this all season long. Something has to happen.
Yeah, something's going to happen. I say, get the camping chair back out. Let's just relax.
I think what they should do, one of the main reasons Adrian Newey left is, you know, the control freakness of Ron Dennis. I think with all the money they have in Arabia, they should just give him a blank check and bring Adrian Newey back. I think that's the only guy who can. I mean, if you're not winning with the engine that's winning races, or at least is very competitive, obviously there's a huge problem there. But yeah. I think they should bring back Adrian Newey. I know what motivation will work for him. They can give his son, Harrison Newey, a seat as a test driver.
Perfect.
For the sake of his son, he may do this.
There you go. You want me to text Eric Bouye right now?
Man, you're pretty big on texting. Where did you learn this trick from?
From Pedro.
That's what I was going to say.
Bravo, prego.
Blame everything on Pedro these days.
Yeah, you got to do something with Mr. De La Rosa.
Yeah, I met him briefly, you know, at one of the U.S. Grand Prix when he was with Arrows.
I remember that.
Yeah, and if I remember correctly, his teammate at that race was Jos Verstappen. I think so. I'm not 100% sure.
I think you're right. I think it was the boss.
Yes, the boss. So, sir, what do you think is going to happen in Austria and Silverstone?
I think Vettel has to win.
Both races or just one?
Both races.
Yeah.
It's time.
Now, I'll tell you, man, if Lewis Hamilton gets a 30-point lead, which can be overhauled, what that will do, and that's true of any racing series, that will put a lot of pressure on Sebastian to be more aggressive than he already is. And I think that will really play in Lewis's hands.
There's no doubt. I completely agree. But not only that, that could cause more mistakes.
Yeah, especially at the start, and we'll see. But I'm really looking forward. You know, it is an incredible achievement for one of these kids to become 5-time world champion.
I'm very happy for you, Nasser.
I mean, when Schumacher got his 5th, I mean, you know, you're equaling Fangio's number of championships. It's quite a moment in motorsports history. It's about to be repeated this year. I mean, for sure, it will be repeated this year.
It will be repeated this year for sure.
And I understand Mika Hakkinen will be at Laguna Seca.
You got the press release?
Yes, I did, sir.
Yeah, I saw that too. He'll be hanging around just like last year.
Yeah, you know, he will also be at Goodwood. And what I am thinking of doing is sending, I think he's still affiliated with McLaren, even though Ron, his best buddy, is gone. I'm thinking of sending an email to this PR lady who arranged my interview with Zach Brown at Daytona. See if I can get a slot with Mika at, you know, I met Mika Hakkinen in the hotel lobby on his Grand Prix debut in Phoenix, Arizona with Lotus. And I had a, you know, little chat with him because nobody knew him at that time.
Did you mention me?
No, that was before I got to know you.
Okay. Well, there was the first mistake.
Yes, exactly.
Exactly. Nas, keep up the good work. I want to thank everybody who listens. Good night.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Attention. Attention, Flint has escaped. Find him. Find him.